South of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came up to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Now, since the name of this show is The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, where we talk about what it's really like for expats to live, work, and play, start a business, and or retire down here... Well, right now, it's time to talk about something we think we have a handle on when we're up in the first world, but once you get down here, you'll know the whole concept could be absolutely ass backwards. So what I'm saying is, in this department, you really have to pay attention because you've got a few things to learn, more than a few things. So let's talk about something we've never talked about before. I'm talking about first impressions of people. Now, you know, up in the first world, they say first impressions are everything. Because if you screw it up, you never get a second chance. And most of us who are average or above average think we're pretty good judges of character. I mean, let's face it, none of us think that we'd ever make a bad first impression. Just like we all think we're slightly above average, too. Even though it's statistically impossible. Yep, and maybe we're all from Lake Wobegon instead of Cleveland. Anyway, any of us who are average or above average, we like to think we can size up a person in about 10 seconds. For example... You walk into a store, and you stand in the checkout line at Costco. Don't tell me that within 10 seconds you haven't sized up the guy or gal right next to you. Your brain's already done the analysis, and you think you know 1,000 things about that person. And if you're good, 80 to 90% of the time you're going to be right. After all, it is a survival trait, right? I mean, if you're next to a guy who's dressed up in tattered leathers, and he's got a mohawk, a dog collar, and neck tattoos... Well, the last thing you're going to want to do is take cuts in front of that guy, or even make eye contact. I mean, think about this. Suppose I gave you a test and said, hey, you've got 30 seconds to size up the next person that you meet. I'm sure you'll be able to tell me with reasonable confidence about how old that person is, what he or she weighs, if they have a lot of discretionary income, and their general socioeconomic bracket. All that and much more just by checking out the clothes, the jewelry, and the smartphone. And you'll know even more if you get a peek at the car they drive. And if you're in Costco and you see what they put in their shopping cart, you'll have a good idea of their level of education, too. Not only that, if they're using coupons, you might assume they're a tightwad. Not to mention, you'll know if they're uptight, relaxed, or the nervous type by the way they comport themselves when they're standing in the line. And you'll even have an idea how fastidious they are, their attention to detail. If you were to check out the hair, the grooming, and the fingernails. And better yet, if you hear him say something, like a couple of words or a phrase or two, you'll get a few more solid clues as to that person's level of education. So all in all, I have to say, expats, as a rule, are very good people watchers. Actually, it's part of the fun of being an expat. In fact, you know, there's nothing like sitting for a few hours each day, sitting at a little outdoor restaurant or cafe, sipping espresso or tequila, your choice, and watching the people go by. But you know, a lot of brand new expats are just too antsy to do that. So many people who've just jumped off the treadmill, even though they're down here in Latin America for good and they know it, they just have to have some place to go and something to do all the time. After about 15 minutes in a situation like that, somehow they've just got to get up and keep moving. And by the way, that's one easy way to tell green expats and tourists from seasoned long-term expats. After a while, you just kind of give in, slow down, and go with the flow. And along the way, you become a very good people watcher. And that in turn helps you adapt to the way you should be judging first impressions of Latin people. Because as I'll explain, you have to ditch a lot of your first world preconceptions in that respect. You'll find out soon enough when you live down here, your first impressions of Latin people can be way off base. And of course, in our heads we profile every new person we see. That's a built-in survival mechanism we can't change. So the ACLU says ban profiling. Well, you can't ban human nature. Expat Eddie has an answer for that one. He says, ban the ACLU. And when you get down here to Latin America, first thing, you'll of course continue your profiling. It'll kick in as soon as you board the airliner. As soon as you realize there are Latin pilots and stewardesses, and you see that the plane is mostly filled with Latin passengers. Now, as far as first impressions when you see a first world person, and first impressions when you see a Latin, many times you'll get taken right down a dead alley. Because down here, things aren't exactly as they seem at all. But there is one direct correlation and commonality you can count on, and that's regarding speech and figures of speech. What I mean is, if, for example, you're in the States, and you're talking on the phone to someone else in the States, and you've never actually seen that person before, well, you know as well as I do, just by the way they say their words and their figures of speech, you can get a good idea of what that person's background is. With that, you could easily make a dozen generalizations about a person you've never even seen before. By the slang, and perhaps by the way they clip their words, and of course by the size and breadth of their vocabulary, or lack thereof. Now, that works pretty much exactly the same when you're talking to someone who speaks Spanish. But since most expats who come down here don't know much Spanish at all, in fact, I'd estimate only about 5% of green new expats come down knowing enough Spanish to get around with confidence just using that language. And it'll actually take some years after you learn decent Spanish for you to judge a person's socioeconomic background just by listening to the way they say and phrase things. And here's another thing. Even when your Spanish gets pretty good and you can read the newspaper and understand quite a bit of what people are saying and even understand the telenovelas, that's no guarantee at all that you'll be able to know the Latin accents and pick out which country a person comes from. Because you see, if you take the average born and bred Latin person, a young adult, let's say, they can easily tell the different accents within their own country. Like, for example, a Texan can tell what part of Texas another Texan comes from. While, of course, a New Yorker or a guy from Illinois could never do that. He just might get the guys from Texas, but that's about it. Anyway, the average Latin person can distinguish about 10 different country accents and can easily identify someone, for example, from Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, Argentina, Costa Rica, Colombia, Honduras, Salvador, and Mexico. And some Latins with a very good ear can distinguish even more country accents. Now, take me, for example. Been here more than 20 years. My spoken Spanish is okay, and I can understand most Spanish speakers as long as they're not drunk, and as long as they don't talk as fast as I usually do. As a matter of fact, most native Latin people, who do learn their English pretty well, often complain that people from the U.S. speak way too fast for them. That's their number one complaint when speaking English with us. And by the way, the very same complaint we have when speaking Spanish with them. Though they can understand Canadians much better than people from the U.S. And get this, most Latins who speak English quite well have a very hard time understanding people from the U.K. And I always tell them, don't worry, gringos have the same problem. But anyway, the point I'm getting at is that no matter how well you learn your Spanish, you're never going to know the language as well as the locals. And two, you'll always retain your gringo accent. And yes, Latins tell me we do have a solid gringo accent. And yes, Europeans have country accents that Spanish people can detect too. So when a German speaks Spanish, they can tell in a second he's from Germany. Same goes for Italians and French and Russians too. In fact, I've been told over the years by a number of Latins that the toughest person to listen to speaking Spanish is a person from China or South Korea. From what I've been told, when they speak Spanish, no matter how good it is, Latin folks listening have a difficult time overcoming the accent. And in fact, sometimes the accent itself bothers them so much that they can't concentrate on the words. And Russians speaking Spanish have an accent that's no treat to listen to for a native Spanish speaker either. Okay, that preceding little bit of mumbo jumbo was a warning to gringos and expats that it's very difficult to get a good first impression simply by listening to the way a Latin person speaks. Since Spanish is a second language for us, we'll just never have as good a handle on it to be able to make accurate generalizations about native speakers, and vice versa. So what about the rest of those little subtle people-watching clues? How can they help us gringos and expats when we're trying to get an accurate first impression? Well, I'm telling you right now, except when it comes to the ultra-wealthy classes of people in Latin America, that tiny less than 1% of the population, who have the money to pretty much fashion themselves as gringo and gringa clones, the fact is, looks and actions can fool you every time. For example, let's talk about one thing we can generalize about quite easily up in the first world and be right about our generalizations and snap judgments nearly every time. So let's talk about your choppers, your teeth. And it's true, when you see someone up in the States who smiles and has a brilliant white picket fence smile, you automatically assume that he or she's at least somewhat educated, or the parents were somewhat educated, and at minimum, that person is middle-class American. Now, there is a chance that person comes from a lower socioeconomic background but had good luck of the draw with his genetics. Now, unlike Latin America, up in the States, it's so common for kids who are middle class or upper to have braces these days, as well as any number of expensive cosmetic dental procedures, even at a very young age. Now, that means up there, when you run into some poor snaggletooth guy or someone with dingy, yellow, gray, cracked, broken, or missing teeth, aside from the fact that when a person like that cracks a smile, it could be a social deal breaker, the first thing that goes through our minds is he or she either came from a lower socioeconomic background where things like nice teeth were not a priority, or that person was born in the UK or a former Soviet satellite country. But down here in Latin America, you cannot make that kind of generalization. Now, I'll tell you, at first, I was thrown by it too. Because, like I've said before, often a gringo off the tourist trail will get invited to many social events. And of course, as soon as you start meeting people and shaking their hands and giving that double peck on the cheek to all the ladies, because that's what they do down here, so you better get used to it. Anyway, in your mind, immediately you start profiling people and making generalizations. And I'll tell you, one of my first big shockers was when my lawyer invited me to his brother's birthday party that was being held at his aunt and uncle's very palatial country estate. In fact, the place would have gone well over $1 million in the States. And I'm not talking about $1 million-plus South Beach dollars. I'm talking about $1 million-plus Cleveland dollars. Anyway, I don't have to tell you there were a lot of high rollers at this party. There were bodyguards and SUVs parked all over the lawn and for two or three blocks up and down the highway. And on my trips up to the buffet table, I couldn't help but notice a group of decked out 50 and 60 year olds who were very well heeled, judging by their expensive suits and dresses, and this smart looking group was making their way back and forth to the buffet table and bar just like I was. So I got a real close up look at some of these guys and gals. And the first thing that I noticed was many of these guys, when they cracked a smile, were basically dentally challenged train wrecks. And if I wasn't in Latin America and didn't know any better, I'd have thought they were Texas trailer trash. I mean, we're talking neglect and real bad dental work. I mean, talk about color mismatches. You all know what I'm talking about. There's nothing more obvious than when a person's got a porcelain cap on a front tooth and it's so bulky and mismatched that it looks like a chiclet when the person smiles. I mean, we've all had a friend or two like that, or a drunken uncle who had a glowing headlight tooth back in the 70s or 80s, maybe. But you know, where we come from, that's no way to make friends or influence people, is it? Not to mention a blazing headlight, glow-in-the-dark chiclet tooth is about a -1 on the aphrodisiac scale. But we won't go there. Now, in the smile department, there is something worse than a glow-in-the-dark headlight tooth, and that's a missing front tooth. But there was none of that. However, many a big grin revealed missing upper molars and bicuspids. And big open black spaces like that, where teeth once were, also smacks of trailer trash and carnism in the first world. But yet these folks were wearing real Rolexes and designer shoes, jewelry, clothes, and sunglasses. Yet at the same time, the $250 a month maids and servants handing out the drinks and serving up the food at the buffet, well, 80 to 90% of those chicken bus riding folks had perfect straight white picket fence teeth of their own. These are perfect teeth that any middle-class parent in the States would gladly drop $5,000 on herself just so her own kids could have the same. And I should know, four of my brothers and sisters went down that road themselves, as well as 3/4 of my nieces and nephews. Oh, and by the way, just a little cost of living update here. I recently spoke to a young legal secretary in my lawyer's office who just got her own braces herself. They were costing her about $1,200, spread over 3 years on the pay-as-you-go plan. She added if they weren't on the payment plan, it would have been $800 for a treatment that would cost a cool $5,000 up in the States. And here's a mystery that dentists up in the first world and dentists down here in Latin America just can't explain. It turns out, unlike Western first world societies, where perhaps 50% or more of children and young adults have crooked, crowded or twisted teeth so they end up needing braces, the number down here that would qualify for braces is only about 5 to 10%. So in fact, it is a growth industry because there are more and more people who can afford to pay for braces, which is something that was virtually unheard of in the general population just a few short years ago. In fact, 20-something years ago, when I first got down here to Latin America, even in Costa Rica, Back then, probably the richest Latin country per capita, I don't remember seeing anyone with braces. Not to mention, in the last few years, for the first time, some employers, mostly transnational companies, like Sears and Starbucks and Office Depot, they're offering dental insurance to their employees, which for Latin America is a whole new concept. Anyway, no one seems to be able to explain satisfactorily why so many Latin Americans have nice, straight, beautiful teeth. And I'll qualify that by saying young Latin Americans, because since most of them do not have good dental hygiene, no matter how nice their teeth seem to look, there are always greater problems lurking. I mean, come on, like my own dentist told me, only expats, gays, dentists, and educated women floss in Latin America. And that's why he says by the time a Latin American is 30 years old, nearly everyone has lost some teeth by then. And that's in every socioeconomic class. So why do so many young Latins have such beautiful white straight teeth? Well, is it all genetic? Is it diet? Is it environmental? Nobody seems to know, but sounds like a good master's thesis now, doesn't it? And you know, us first worlders, with our severe aesthetic demands. I mean, these days you've got first world guys using all kinds of expensive cosmetics and hair products. And how many young first world women do you know who don't critique themselves every time they pass a mirror? Well, the thing is, down here in Latin America, although Latins love to dress to the hilt, as a rule, they're very forgiving about visual defects. Like, for example, ear and nose hair, bad breath, and bad teeth. And it's women who forgive their men with those defects. Because so often you'll see a beautiful Latin woman, dressed to the hilt, made up and looking like $1 million, even if she only makes $300 or $400 a month, and she'll be with a guy who's, well, let's be kind and say, a mismatch. And here's an example. Expat Eddie lives in a wealthy, guarded community in Salvador, and one of the guards that lets you in when you drive up to the gate is a pot-bellied 50-something guy who's missing a front tooth. And he's a smiley, happy-go-lucky guy, and it doesn't seem to bother him a bit. And you might say, well, that must really put a dent in his love life. However, Eddie says he's on his second wife, and she's a young, pretty thing. And one day I saw her bringing him his lunch at the guard shack, and she did look like she could be his good-looking daughter. Now, of course, they're both from the poor, just making ends meet lower classes. But obviously, you could see that at least with some classes of people, there doesn't seem to be any fatal stigma attached to a guy with a pot belly and who's missing a front tooth. Obviously, as they say in the States, he must have a good personality. And he does. Like I said, he's smiling and laughing all the time. So again, the bottom line is, in Latin America, like nowhere else, you cannot judge people by appearances. For example, why is it when you're in a high-end restaurant or a bar, and you see a well-dressed Latin guy with a nice car, and he sits down alone at a table and orders Johnny Walker Red, and when his friends show up, for his next drink, he automatically switches to Johnny Walker Black? Of course, his friends don't know he was drinking red, but you know, if you keep your eyes open, you see little switcheroos like that all the time. Because you see, Latin men like to put on a show and demonstrate their class and their ability to pay for it, even if the wife and kids at home go without. And here's another example. Why is it that 3 out of 4 BMWs and Mercedes-Benz autos were not bought at BMW or Mercedes-Benz dealerships in Latin America? And the next question is, how can that be? Well, that's because, you know, down here, it's the biggest status symbol in the world, for a guy that is, to drive a Mercedes, a BMW, or an Audi, in that order. But you see, most people down here with those kind of cars can't afford to buy them at the dealership. So there are companies all throughout Latin America whose sole purpose is to allow a Latin person to buy a wrecked car at an auction in the United States, and you view those wrecked cars on the internet before you put in a bid. Then the company will ship your wrecked car down on a flatbed and have it repaired down here by body men who work for third world wages like $300 a month, not first world wages like $3,000 a month. So that way, you could roll around town in a high-end car, just like the king of the dirt pile and the tits of the Ritz, for maybe half the price of a similar car bought down here at a dealership. And of course, being that these cars were generally heavily damaged, again, appearances aren't what they seem. And don't get me wrong, they look nice on the outside and the inside. Body guys do excellent work. But never forget, they were wrecks. And speaking of cars and dealerships, try this one on for size. The other day, I was with an expat friend of mine at a big Toyota dealership in San Pedro Sula, Honduras. And he was there having some routine service done on his Hilux pickup. And we were only supposed to be there an hour, but since this is Latin America, we were in the little waiting room lounge for 2 hours, and still, they hadn't even started on his truck yet. Anyway, we were sitting there shooting the breeze and cutting up on the bad soap opera on TV in the lounge, when suddenly, three little campesinos walked in. They looked to be 50 or 60-ish, weather-worn, heavily tanned from the sun, wearing that signature Central American white cowboy hat, and obviously, they were brothers. They looked like they came out of the same mold. Oh, and did I tell you, all three of them had machetes in beautiful leather tool sheaths with a lot of little metal stud work. Typical for the average guy living out in the sticks in Latin America. The design and the tooling on the leather sheath is a point of pride for these guys. Just like a nice tooled saddle is for a cowboy. Anyway, these three guys sat on the black sofa next to us. They were the usual polite and happy type. And of course they said, "Buenos tardes" to us gringos. And they all three went for the free coffee and just absolutely loaded it up with milk and sugar. It's what all Latins do. To this day, I've never met a Latin American person who drinks his coffee black. And I've never met one that took less than 2 spoons of sugar. In fact, it's not unusual to see him toss in 4 or 5. So here they are with the best coffee in the world, and they're just killing it with milk and sugar. But I digress, as usual. Anyway, one of the three guys got up and went over to the little newsstand and pulled out one of the promotional pamphlets for the pickup trucks. And here's the thing, as one of the brothers was flipping through it, he'd occasionally stop and softly read out loud to the other two something or other about the truck. It was obvious the two brothers couldn't read. And the brother holding the pamphlet and reading wasn't doing gangbusters himself, but he was getting by. Then, after about 10 minutes, one of the Toyota salesmen walked in, and he said to the three guys in Spanish, of course, "We have a green one, a red one, and a white one, all with full equipment, and a blue one with manual windows and just air conditioning." And then he said, "The green one's right out in front in the parking lot, and we can take that one for a ride right now." So they left, and a half an hour later, they were back in the room again and sitting down next to us. Then, the little guy who could read, he grabbed his little beat-up duffel bag sack off the floor, and I recognized it was made of the same kind of material they make 100-pound coffee sacks out of, a kind of a burlap canvas material. Anyway, when the salesman popped back into the lounge, the little guy opened his bag just a bit and said to the man, "We have cash. Tenemos efectivo." So the three little guys walked out of the lounge, and the salesman ushered them into his little cubicle on the main floor. So meanwhile, an hour later, finally my expat friend got his service work done, and that salesman was walking around and he stopped up at the cajero. That's the little cage, the window where you pay. Anyway, he reached into the window right in front of us and grabbed some paperwork. And I asked him, because I'm a curious guy, "Do you have many customers like that, you know, coming in from the campo and buying cash for a brand new vehicle?" Then he said, without batting an eye, "Oh, a couple times a month." And then he grinned and added, "By the way, they bought 3. So just to reinforce what I said before, down here in Latin America, appearances can be very deceiving. So you might ask, what's the story on those guys from the campo? Obviously, that's proof guys like that don't trust banks. These little guys, and I mean they were little, like about 5'3". Anyway, it's obvious these guys had themselves some kind of coffee ranch. And as I'm sure you guys know, ever since Starbucks took off maybe 10 years ago and made gourmet and designer coffees ever so cool with the yuppies and the buppies and the frappuccuppies, well, prices for the good coffee's gone up 500 to 1,000% since then. And when that happened, any small farmer, as long as his piece of land was at least 4,000 feet or above, that, combined with volcanic soil, makes for some of the best coffee in the world. That's why when you're driving around in the boonies in Latin America, you'll often see brand new pickup trucks with a lot of fresh, gaudy, aftermarket chrome and silly extra fog and spotlights on them. Because, you know, once one of these guys buys a brand new truck, he wants everyone in the neighborhood to know it. So it's true, you'll see a lot of tricked out new and late model pickup trucks with short little guys with cowboy hats and machetes driving them. And believe it or not, some of these little guys and their families have a lot of money, cash money. And they don't drive pretentious SUVs or have bodyguards or Rolexes or any of that crap. It's not their style. They have pickup trucks and they actually use them for work every single day. And you might ask, why not bodyguards? I mean, after all, some of these guys that don't trust banks do have shoeboxes full of cash under their mattresses. Well, let's just say these folks out in the boonies have little faith in banks or cops or any authority, no more than anyone in the big city. However, these guys have machetes and they know how to use them. Oh, and by the way, the expat friend that was with me, he used to be an EMT back in the States. And when those three guys walked out of the lounge and sat down in the salesman's cubicle, my friend said to me, "Johnny, you know what? I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but the little guy with the money sack has a nice little cancer growing on his face." And I said, "What? How do you know that?" And he said, "Trust me, I know." And I said, "Well, you think he knows about it?" And my friend said, "Probably not. You know, cowboys and campesinos like that, doesn't matter how much money they have, they don't go to doctors unless they're dying." Then I asked, "Well, you think it'll kill them?" And my friend said, "Probably not. But when he finally does something about it, they'll have to take a nice chunk of his nose with it." So then comes the dilemma. I said, "You're going to tell him?" And he said, "Well, I don't think that would be a good idea." And I said, "What? No friendly advice?" Now, my expat friend's in the oil business, and he said he's had a lot of experience dealing with campesinos and old-fashioned cowboy types like that. He's had to deal with a few of these guys on oil leases and stuff, and he said they're not likely to take any advice from gringos or anyone else that's not a local boy or some elder or someone with stature in the community. And he said chances are if you'd said something like that to him, you'd surely embarrass him in front of his brothers, and these cowboy guys are really macho, and you wouldn't want to see him lose face like that. The fact is, my friend said, if I were to tell him to have it checked, he'd probably never go to the doctor just to save face with his brothers and prove that I was full of crap. It'd be like a stranger telling Oprah to stop eating or Lindsay Lohan to stop partying. These are the kind of guys that almost never make it to the big city, only for very big special occasions, like, for example, buying a car. And in fact, my expat buddy said, "I'll bet you those three guys not only never spoke to a gringo before, I'll bet today was the first time they ever saw two of them in one place at one time." Then finally my friend said, "Johnny, what if you were up in the States sitting next to a guy in a barber shop and the guy had a suspicious lesion on his nose? Would you say, 'Hey bud, you ought to have someone take a look at that'?" Now, I ask you, how many people who could spot something like that would open their mouth and stick their neck out for a stranger? Now, I have to admit, I haven't been back to the States in over 20 years, so I didn't have an answer for him. But maybe you guys out there can tell me, what would you have done? I mean, not just hypothetically. I mean, in real life, what would you do? Okay, and before I wrap up today, remember, I've still got a couple places left for my Latin American seminar, which is coming up fast in the third week of June. So just go to expatwisdom.com and click on the seminar link for all the details.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, coming to you each week from somewhere south of the border. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture. He knows.